Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is Canadian powerhouse drummer Corky Laing, who is essentially associated with rock and roll folklore and as one of the elite drummers in the world. Laing is a longtime member for hard rock heavy metal giants Mountain and the blues rock power trio of Wes, Bruce, and Laing. But Laing's musical collaborations are seemingly endless, a list that includes alliances with John Lennon, Jack Bruce, Meatloaf, Noel Redding, Mahogany Rush, 10 Years After, Ian Hunter, Mick Ronson, Bo Diddley, and Government Mule, to name a few. Laing is also a producer and composer. Corky Laing has recently added a brand new chapter to his illustrious musical career. Laing's most recent project is a fascinating collaboration with two internationally acclaimed professors, intermingling the degree of genetic engineering with a rock opera music scheme. The concept album entitled Playing God is performed by The Perfect Child, an incredible ensemble of musicians and singers. At the core of the rock opera is Corky Laing, who astounds instrumentally, lyrically, and vocally. The album concept is brilliant, and the music is colossal. It's an awe-inspiring rock musical production and a cross between Welcome to My Nightmare, The Wall, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Recently, Corky Laing has been on tour with Corky Laing Plays Mountain, sitting in with K2, Peter Barron, Ken Sidoti, and Joe Venti, a band saluting Mountain's music, for a couple of gigs during 2014 and 2015, reminding Corky how much he liked playing Mountain songs the way they were originally written. Now he's looking at touring both Europe and the U.S., celebrating the Mountain legacy. On the European tours, Corky is joined by Joe Venti, formerly of Leslie West Band, on bass and vocals, and Phil Baker of Uriah Heep Legends and Pulse Echoes of Floyd on guitar and vocals. In November 2015, they toured the UK, and in February 2016, Germany, playing the immortal Mountain classics and throwing in some Wes, Bruce, and Laing and Cream for good measure. Playing God, the rock opera, will also return to Helsinki in April. Corky says, "The drums are the best instrument in the world. When you're a kid, go to your dad and say, 'Dad, I want to grow up, and I want to be a drummer.' Your dad says, 'You've got to choose one or the other.'" Welcome to the show, legendary drummer, composer, producer, singer, and member of classic rock legends Mountain and Wes, Bruce, and Laing, Mr. Corky Laing. Welcome, Corky.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you. I still like that joke about the drummer. If you can't, you got to choose one or the other, you know, because when you play drums, you do never grow up. You know, I think Levon Helm once said, "Why grow up if you don't have to?" You know, and
yeah.
on the drums here, it's just fun. It's just a lot of fun, and yeah, there's technique and there's a lot of rehearsal and practice. But when you get into the zone, yeah, it's a wonderful place to be. It's a wonderful place to be. So I feel very blessed overall. Well, I mean, you've suddenly take a journey in the last few years that I've been working. I don't even notice it. I don't even notice. There's no work involved. It's just it's just all play, Ray. And your support for the opera out of the shoot was really, really very, very valuable, and it was wonderful. Gave us a little shot of incentive, and the opera is still going on. It's a wonderful project, and you know, I think it's got legs, so to speak. You know, I think it's got legs for the years to come. But yeah, it's great to be here, and like Keith Richards said, it's great to be anywhere. But again, it's It's a Wonderful Life. I think that's the Christmas. That's the Christmas movie, right? It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, I watched that last night, as a matter of fact, and it'll probably be on 150 more times before Christmas.
Yeah, it will be. It's just to remind. It's just to remind people that hey, if you're not dirt napping and you got
right.
a pulse, don't worry. Everything will work out. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But in most cases, you know, time takes care of all that stuff. You know. And it's Christmas, and happy holidays to you and your crew and everybody out there.
Same to you.
Yeah.
And you always have a positive attitude about things, and you've got so many logs on the fire going on. And, of course, you know, the big one, which I love, is the rock opera. And we met in Florida. I live in Florida to the listening audience. We met in Venice, and right before the kickoff, of the rock opera. We chatted about it, and I thought it was a fantastic idea. The album, I gave it 5 stars, and you've been performing. First of all, congratulations on touring. I mean, that was a tremendous feat, just touring the rock opera.
Yeah, that was ambitious. I got to hand it to Tuja Tikala, who, like, again, was the leader and the conductor of. Yeah, there was 20-odd people in the cast, and we didn't have, like, major, you know, monumental management. She just took it on herself to – it was really running on very good vibes. You know, it was just, you know, to get all those people, by the way, from all over the world, to get together and, you know, and just put it across in different countries, in different locations – yeah, it was quite something. I have to say, it's going to go down. It was certainly in my life one of the most foremost events ever, Ray. And I just feel very blessed. It's something that came out of nowhere, and it's going somewhere. So I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled about that. You know,
talk a little bit. I mean, I know how with the inception of the opera started and how it all came about. Tell our listening audience how it actually came to play.
Well, I'll tell you what, over the previous to that, I was touring. I was doing some touring, and I was up in Canada. I had to go and hang with my son who was going to university in Toronto. And I was asked over a period of time to do some guest lecturing, mostly about the international marketing of music, etc. My brother was he's a professor at McGill in Montreal, and he asked me to come and just talk to the students about the philosophy and, you know, the lifestyle of rock and roll, because it became a lifestyle. You know, I started in music when it was pop back in the late 50s, and pop is the sound you get when you put milk in the cereal. And I worked my way from pop into rock, and rock really started when the drums got off the click track, and all of a sudden drummers were free to play and kick the guitar player's ass. That's the way I look at it. But getting back to the opera, Tuya and Maddie, the professors, Tuya Tikal and Maddie Havry, were professors, and we crossed paths with each other in the university online with the university thing, because I was asked by the University of Western Ontario to do a course. It was advanced studies in the entertainment industry. I guess they figured... they looked at my background. They said, wait a second, this guy's had a lot of luck and a lot of success on the creative part of the music industry, and he's lasted and he's lived on music, so he must know something about business. And the University of Western Ontario has the biggest business school in that area in Canada and one of the largest music faculties. So they hired me to try to teach the students how to actually live and work in music, doing the business and doing the creative aspects. So I went there and I had this course, and it was great. I hooked up with Maddie and Tuja over on a tour that we did in Sweden, and they asked me if I would go and maybe do a guest lecturing at the University of Helsinki, which I said, yeah, I'd love to. It would be great. And it was English, so it was pretty easy. And from there, I did two or three universities while I was in Finland. Hence, we started talking, and they came out during a couple of nights of wine and cheese, and you know the Finns can drink. You know that.
Yeah, I know that.
I didn't realize. I thought the Canadians could drink. They're running a close second. Anyway, so we're sitting around, and they started talking about, because Maddie wrote these books on research in genetic manipulation, mostly ethical. So when he says ethical, and he says, would you like to help us with a musical, we're thinking about somehow using the book stories of different, like, you know, stem cells and cloning and stuff. And it's going way over my head. Ray, I'm telling you, I'm looking at him with dazed. I said, you gotta be kidding. And he says, yeah, we know what we want to talk about. We need some help with the music. So this was just, I said, sure, let's start putting down some songs. And they both play a bit. And we started working on, and it was just one of these serendipitous things where you just start playing. And there was a guy there, an engineer, musician, who started recording it. And it started making sense. Right?
Right.
It's kind of all of a sudden it started to come together, because it's really easy, or I shouldn't say really easy, but it's easier to write when you know what direction you're going. I mean,
right.
If you're an independent story, a songwriter, and that's wonderful. But it's challenging because you're picking things out of the air. You're picking ideas. You're picking a love affair. You're picking whatever it is out of a lifestyle. And in this case, they knew what they wanted to write about. It was there were six little stories about, you know, involve stories about ethical manipulation. Is it right or is it wrong? And it all gets down to perfection, that people want to be perfect. So there's an underlying theme there that seems very Western, if you don't want me saying
so. Sure.
It's kind of like, well, wait a second. Here we're in Finland, and they're talking about cloning the perfect this and the perfect that. And it's not so much there's a judgment on it. It's just a discussion on the ethics. How perfect can you make a body? You know, it's like playing God. So
right.
To me, that was, I'm thinking, wow. And I attribute that, you know, I spin off and think about music. And there is no perfect music. If there is any perfect music, you're talking Bach and Mozart, etc. But in terms of rock and roll, there really isn't any perfect rock and roll. As a matter of fact, rock and roll, or I hate the roll part of it. Let's talk about rock. So rock, it sounds like a deli, you know. But the rock aspect of it is part. It's not supposed to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's where how it came about. And the music and the players over there were wonderful. And they asked me to, you know, basically and. Overall, take a look at the concept and write around it, and Tuja and Maddie would give me ideas for the lyrics, and that's when it came about. And again, there was no purpose in it. It was just to do it. It was the love
right.
of making an opera, a musical opera. And then all of a sudden, Tuja says, "Well, let's try it out. Let's try it out in Finland." And they got a theater, and then it got a call from another university and. Basel, Switzerland, and then we got a call from the University of Paris to go and do, I guess, presentations of the opera, and
right.
it started to build. Bottom line is the academic people, the community loved it. You know why? Because it gave a bling, it gave some sex, it gave some stuff to the philosophy departments in these universities. Needless to say, if you have a friend, Ray, and what are you studying at school, and he says, well, I'm majoring in philosophy, usually
yeah.
you go, what? You know, you think?
Right.
And so they wanted to put some sex in, or I hate to use the word sex, but some, you know, some interest, you know, to
sure.
draw people into the concept of studying philosophy and what it means. In this case, of course, it's rock philosophy. And, of course, if you take a look at ethics, and you take a look at rock, it's both sides of the spectrum. Go
sure.
figure, right? What are you going to do? So I'm a little bit out of breath here, right? That's how the opera sort of came about in capsule form. And the good news is it's a work in progress. We did a sold-out performance at this big theater, the K Theater in New York City.
Oh,
and
great.
It was just wonderful. They had all kinds of people showed up. And we videotaped it and that, but we're going to do a quintessential show with four or five cameras when we do our Gloria Theater performance in April. And we're going to really do a first division job on the filming of it, so then we have it, so we don't have to drag 20-odd people around the country, around the world, to perform it. And at the same time, if we can cut it back, if we can do certain things to you know, to make it more effective, poignant. It's a pretty complicated subject, as you probably saw. And but you know what? It was just a very, it's still challenging. We're still working on it. And it just keeps the mind going. And I think it's I think there's something to say about ethics these days. And not that I, you know, I don't want to be presumptuous or pretentious and say that I get it totally, because I don't, you know, but I'm studying it, you know, and it's just, it's wonderful, right? It's just, you know, it keeps that mind muscle and keeps it going, you know.
I love to see it on Broadway. I mean, Broadway's always been good to rock operas, you know, in the past.
Yeah, they have. It may, this is the thing, Ray, you're right. It may, as a result of doing this proper video, this, I hate to call it a video, a proper film, they're doing, they have all this high-end technology now at this theater. So we may have, it could be very cool. The format could be very advanced.
Right.
And yeah, it would be nice to do something like this. I don't know how to say it. Complicated is not the right word. It's not like just a whim. It's not a very, I hate to say it's not very commercial. It is in a lot of ways. But the topic itself, when you remind people about something they have to think about, a lot of people don't want to think.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, we all say, hell with thinking. You know, I remember with Leonard Cohen, I think the 80s came about, Leonard Cohen says, people don't want to hear lyrics, they want to dance. You know, they don't want to, and that was his career going down the tubes because
he's a poet.
Yeah,
I know, I'm just the opposite.
Yeah, I know. Well, the point, but there, you know, they have these wave of trends that go down, and that's what you live with, you know.
Exactly.
And which comes first, you know, the dance or the music?
I always
think, no matter what, when I play anything, I really, my first priority is you got to be able to dance to it as a drummer. And then, of course, after that, it goes wherever it goes. But dancing is very important. But, you know, it's great to be a drummer. That's all I could say. Ray, it is the most beautiful instrument in the world. It is. I mean, it's got all the blings. It's got the beautiful round curves. It's got, I mean, come on. It's the sexiest instrument there is. And by the way, when you look at a drummer, especially a rock drummer, I think in most cases, jazz drummers too, you watch them, it's like choreography, like the, you know, ambidextry. Everything is moving in their body, you know, and it's going, yes, it's striking the drums, and you got pulses, and you got rhythm. But it's really like, I used to love to watch a lot of the drummers when I grew up. I mean, Keith Moon was like an amusement park. He was like, it was like a circus watching him, you know. And I remember seeing Keith Moon and going, I want to be him. And I think, what was I, maybe 13, 14 years old, I remember saying, wow, I really love that. Look at how much fun he's having. I mean, when you look at a sax player, it's hard to say, is he having fun, you know, or is his lips chapped, or, you know, does he have bad breath? I don't know.
You know, you told me in the last interview that you watched Keith Moon behind, you were in Madison Square Garden, I guess, you were right behind him.
Yeah.
And everything he did, you watched everything he did for 3 days, and you still couldn't do one of them. Why is Keith Moon so hard to, you know, copy, I guess?
Well, I'm sorry you can't talk to him in person. I really believe it. He doesn't know what he was doing specifically.
Right.
Technically, it was just all passion. He heard it, it went through his head, and he just interpreted with his body. I mean, he did fills on the drums that, in any case, you would never expect.
Right.
And the way he did the fills, I mean, sometimes he was totally in another time signature. I mean, I really looked at him as an amazing jazz drummer because he did swing. And I don't know, it's just the joy of drumming is, it's like the joy of cooking, and both pretty similar too. It's just, you know, I can go on, as you probably noticed, I do go on about drumming because you know, it's you play, and I love the idea that you don't have to be on a click track, you know.
Right,
in other words, when I look at the drummers that are really celebrated these days, who are remembered, classic or non-classic, are the guys that weren't attached to an electric sequencer or a metronome. So, the main, you know, like Bill Ward from Black Sabbath or, John Bonham did not have a click track, you know. He played with the freedom. It's all, like, symbolic Ray. You know, the whole idea of the freedom of playing off a click track and feeling that, and at the same time moving people. I mean, it's monumental when you start figuring it out, and it's effortless. It's effortless. You don't
So define off the click track.
Off the click track to me, and it could sound like I'm a little bit out there and did too much drugs in the 60s, but I have to me, it's the freedom. It's the freedom of playing as a drummer. I was very fortunate. I had Felix on bass, and when I started, I was a kid. I think I was 19 when I was playing with Felix, and he would just say, you can do anything you want to do. Just make sure you show me the one so I can come home. You know, I could come home at the end of the song. And that was my job, to make sure no matter what I did in the window of time that the song was going on, that I showed them the one every now and then. And I had the freedom. I got to tell you, and I just remember, you know, as time went on into the 70s, these drummers were getting attached to the click track. And Dennis from Foreigner, I remember, great music, great sound, but they were locked in. They were locked in to a click track, and there's that part of you that's limited. You know, it's like getting in bed with a woman saying, by the way, she tells you, don't get hard. I don't know. That's not a good metaphor, is it? I got to change that one. But what I'm getting at is you're only doing it part way. You're not doing the whole deal. And that's what the click track means to me. I had a long talk with Bill Ward from Black Sabbath. I said, you know, you set a tempo for an entire cult of people, of society that just nodded their heads with you. I said, you know, that's taking over somebody's heart. Yes, when you listen to songs, you take and it goes to your mind, and you know you trip out on songs because they're beautiful and they make you cry. But drummers make you move.
Yeah,
and
that's
right. if we stop moving, we're in trouble. We got to keep moving, and I believe the drummers of the rock drummers keep a certain generation going. I mean, I don't know. Again, I can go on, which I seem to be going again. Shut me down any time, Ray. Just shut it down.
Well, I agree with you 100%. One of my favorite drummers also that I got to do a Skype interview with, he's a great guy, is Billy Cobham.
Oh, Billy's wonderful,
Another
Billy,
amazing guy.
I have a little story with Billy. When he was playing with his band, with Larry, what was the name of that band? The early 70s, West was 73. Billy Cobham, the guitar player, Larry? Anyways, he had a great band, a jazz band. It was all jazz. And Billy was playing a single bass drum. And he was watching me play double bass drums with West, Bruce, and Lang. And I was, you know, going crazy on the drums. And after the show, he says, by the way, Corky, how do you play double bass drums? I said, pretend you're running from the law. And I didn't realize, I didn't mean it as a racist thing, but I had him call him back, and I said, Billy, no, I didn't mean it. He's laughing. Yeah, just get on there and pretend you're running, you know. And sure enough, Ray, he got the double bass drums.
He did.
An amazing drummer, amazing drummer.
Well, you also made a statement with your cowbell on Mississippi Queen, and you know that's people always remember that cowbell in front of Mississippi Queen. It's just one of a kind thing. And I've heard the inception. Lots of people have heard the inception of Mississippi Queen, the song, which actually you wrote. Can you tell the audience about that?
Yeah. Initially, I was again another story. Hold on, everybody. We were in Nantucket with my local band. The name of the band was Energy. And we were playing in the small beach club. It was amazing. You know, the funky beach club in Nantucket. And the lights, all the lights one night, a huge Saturday night, sweaty, hot Nantucket evening, the lights went out because everybody on the island put on their air conditioner. Now, we're going back to the early 60s, where people didn't have air conditioning in beach places. They loved the air. These were new houses with air conditioning. So the lights go off, and a friend of mine, Roy Bailey, is out there, and he's a hog. He is a horny hog, and he's got a gorgeous girl who I had met before, you know, that afternoon, and he's dancing. Her name is Molly, and she's got a see-through dress, a skin-colored see-through dress, and they're dancing, and the lights go off. And, you know, everybody sweat. Now, what Roy wasn't going to stop dancing, and he just screamed at me, keep on playing, Cork, you know. And I was playing Cripple Creek. I remember I was playing down on Cripple, you know, and I just, and the lights went out, and of course all the organ went off, the guitar. I'm unplugged. I think I had taken some soul pills that night, and I'm screaming out at this girl. I'm saying, keep on dancing, and I just threw out Mississippi Queen, you know, because she was from the South, Molly from Mississippi, and I screamed out over and over, and my voice went, there was no mic, I was screaming, and I didn't want to play the drums because they were too loud, so I played the cowbell, and there's a really weird recording that somebody did way back on, I think it's out on a English label, you know, one of those old, you know, bootleg things. Anyway, so that's the way the song, there was no music, it was just me screaming, Mississippi Queen, you know what I mean? And I would blink at her and I'd try to get, I was trying to pull her from Roy, you know, that was my job, you know, why not, right? See if you can, you know, the drummer gets some, come on, give the drummer some. Anyway, so that's the way it started. That summer, when I hooked up with Leslie and Felix, Leslie said, you got any songs? You got any ideas? I said, yeah, I actually have this, I wrote out the lyric to this song, Mississippi Queen. I finished it, you know, when I went to New York. I just, you know, I always wrote down things. And Leslie put the lick on it. And it was like, it wrote itself in the limo, as they say.
Sure.
You know, it just come out, and we went in the studio that night and banged it out 14 times. And the only thing I could do to keep the time together, because those guys had those huge Sun amps, and they had the Marshalls, you name it, in the studio, it was deafening. So the only way they would, I couldn't say, one, two, one, two, three. You couldn't do that. So I was smashing a cowbell, kick, 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 that's the thing. And sure enough, they came right in with the lick. So we go to mix the record, and I remember I said to Felix, well, you could pull the cowbell out now. That was just for the temple. He said, you got to be kidding. That's the coolest cowbell. So there you go.
That's a great. That's one of the greatest rock songs in history.
Thank you.
It really
thank
is.
You.
Yeah, it was also one of the rowdiest concerts I've ever been to. It was Mountain.
Which one was that in Florida?
No, this was in D.C. You know, I'm originally from D.C.
Oh,
yeah.
I think that was an American university, was it? Georgetown.
One of them was Georgetown. That one was with Spooky Tooth, if you remember that show.
That's
right.
Yeah, Mick Jones. I remember that because they didn't have any lights on the stage.
No, it was a
Super Trooper. Everybody was getting laid in the audience because there was no lights. I remember
there.
That. It was wild. You're right, Ray. That was wild. I remember.
I think the Sharks opened the show up. It was the Sharks, Spooky Tooth, and you guys.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. They came on the road with us. Yeah.
I think Leslie West came out and said, welcome to the Midnight Special or something like that, because the Midnight Special was popular at that time.
Yeah.
It was a great
show.
No,
we did.
Show.
Yeah, that was I do remember those. I mean, a lot of people think, you're on drugs. You know what I mean? No, I never played Stones. I always made sure I got stoned after. Because, you know, not that I remember, anyways.
That's
right there is a stab in the back. Okay, so what happened was I always got a buzz after the show to try to keep the buzz of the show up.
Right,
you know,
right.
You smoke a doobie after and you keep the adrenaline going. But I remember that show, Jesus, because we did. We played Georgetown, American University, and there was one other. We had a good time. The college stuff was really happening then. I don't know what's going on now, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what happened now, you know. It's
well, I tell you what,
not the same anymore.
I don't know. I'll tell you what happened. It's computers. I mean, kids will go upstairs and watch porn. They don't have to go see now. You know?
Yeah, they watch porn on their smartphones.
That's right. Now it's moved right up. But it really turned around pretty quick. You know, I'm sure the colleges are doing great, and they have their own scene going on. And it's, things change and stuff like that. But oddly enough, Ray, that's at a lot of the shows that I'm playing now, a lot of kids show up. A lot of, college kids show up at it.
Yep.
I don't know. I think their grandparents told them about Mountain, and they were curious, I guess, you know. But they come to the show. We get a very young crowd coming out, if anything, for curiosity, you know.
Right.
And I think from an organic point of view, when you look at Mountain, when I play with these guys, whether it's Joe or with Phil, They're just plugged in. They don't even have a wireless guitar. They're plugged in the old-fashioned way. The umbilical cord goes to the amp, and, you know, you see everything you see is what you hear, and vice versa. And, you know, it's just a complete landscape picture of rock. And that, to me, is very pure. And, you know, I'm an old-fashioned guy, but it's so old, it's new. You know, people, the garage bands come out. You get the indie bands coming out. Yep. They're doing it. They're doing it because they love it, and they're doing it without any tricks, as I say.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I like it without any tricks. You've got, let's say, in April, you'll be in Helsinki for the rock opera.
Yeah, we'll be there a week. We've got two or three shows there in Helsinki.
And
yeah, that'll be April. And then in May, we're going back, I think I got this right, Ray, to the U.K. We're going to be doing some festivals in May. And, you know, that's as far as I can foresee right now. Hey, listen, I remember, like, 30 years ago, I didn't know what I was doing the next hour. It's really... I'm very impressed with myself that I can tell you this shit, you know?
Yeah,
it's
I don't know how you guys did it back in the day. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I remember when I was playing with Noel, you know, they were touring. Hendrix was touring right before Mountain, I mean, the years before. And he would tell me... They just kept those son of a guns just working and touring all the time, where they get the gig literally 2 days before, and they get to the promoter, okay, we're going to this park, you know, get a stage. You know, it was just very spontaneous.
Right.
It was pretty wild. So, you know, these days it's all like planned 6 months ahead of time. You need lead time, marketing and stuff. I have to say I don't miss that marketing aspect. There's a lot that goes into it. Of course, I wasn't involved, but, you know, it reminds me of, let me bring this back to you, Ray. My favorite guy in the world was Levon Helm. He still is, God bless him. He said to me, because we were talking about sequencers, and we're talking about plugged in and all the wireless, yada, yada, midis and cities and whatever it is. And I remember he turned on the corky. He says, you know, music's a special thing. You can do anything to music. Music don't care. I just remember, music don't care, of course.
Right.
Music don't care what you do to it. You can do anything, as long as it works. Right?
Yeah. You're the only guy that didn't go to Woodstock, but you got two gold albums.
That's
pretty cool.
That's my favorite story. You know, I tell you, that story does not get old, but and I have to say, I use it. I'm corny when it comes to that shit. But when you hang up two gold records on your beautiful village, you know, brick wall, and you're kissing yourself to death, and you go, wow, I got two gold records to Woodstock, and I wasn't even there, you know?
You know, I got to admit, I did not know that was you on I'm Going Home on the live version
from Woodstock. That's me. Well,
I did not know that.
You can barely hear it. I mean, you know, the way it was mixed. But I get a kick out of that because Rick Lee, the drummer, I run into him here and there. And he says, Corky, will you fucking stop talking about that? Make me look bad.
What happened to him anyway, Rick Lee?
He's still around. Oh, no, he's playing.
What happened to him Woodstock?
Nothing happened to him.
Right.
He didn't know. The mics didn't work. They were
off. Oh, crap.
You know? It's the same thing when Mountain played the train festival, you know, the Cross Canada festival, which I guess it was called the Express, the Rock and Roll Express. Anyways, they forgot to put the film in the camera, so we were never in that. You know, it happens, babe. You know, those were the days. But so the mics didn't work. You know, they didn't work at that point. Oh, that was a joy. That was great. That was great fun. You know.
To me, that was probably the best performance on the show was Alvin Lee, even though, you know, it's a little repetitive, you know, him singing
a
on
little,
the home.
A little. You think?
But it had a lot of energy, you know?
Yeah. Well, the point is that was, because there's a time and place for everything, right?
Right.
And that
was,
you know, if you were on the stage at the right time in those shows, you really got it down, you know. You're lucky. I mean, a lot of it was serendipitous, you know. And you never know what was going to come up around the corner and bite you in the ass. But I tell you what, I just happen to be very lucky. Again, I'll drop a drummer, Bill Buford, right?
And
And his whole philosophy is, it's all about when you were born, mate. You know? which comes down to it. I happen to be, and I think I told you, Ray, I said, you know, As a teenager in the 50s, you were a nobody. But if you were a teenager in the 60s, you were everybody.
Everybody.
And
right.
I happen to be lucky, and you're lucky. You were a teenager in the 60s.
Right.
Everything came with it. The whole ball of wax, you know, was great.
Yeah, I miss those days a lot, you know, just for the fact that radio was so great. You know, I mean, you know, where can you listen to the Beatles and Frank Sinatra and, you know, who knows when? Everybody else, Mountain on Top 40 radio.
Yeah,
know?
That
just,
was...
Can't do that.
And they're trying to replicate that, you know, with a lot of the new programs. And the whole idea about radio is there was a guy there talking about it. Either he's drunk and he screwed up, but there was a personality with the disc jockey. You know, Wolfman Jack was a perfect example.
Oh, I love Wolfman Jack.
Yeah,
he was
and,
my
know,
idol.
Yeah, and they had Cousin Brucey and all.
Yep.
I mean, you listen to it, and it's, as a matter of fact, I did a show 1989 in the Levitt Pavilion in Westport, Connecticut. I did an all-star show. We had Meatloaf. We had, from the Average White Band. I had Felix Cavalieri. I had Levon Helm. I called in all my favorite friends, and come on in, we're going to jam. And actually, Mick Taylor was there, too.
Oh,
and
really?
It was great. And I'm trying to figure out why I'm telling that story to you now. It's just... That just left with the tinnitus in the left ear. I was telling you that story. Oh, I know why it was. It's because
We're talking about Wolfman Jack.
Ray, this is the most embarrassing thing that can happen. It left me.
we were talking about Wolfman Jack and all those guys.
That's right. Thank you, Cousin Brucey was
Cousin
the MC.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah,
wow.
I have these photographs, and you know what? It was kind of, I just remember his voice. When you come down from Montreal, and you drive through Vermont, and you come down, and then you come to New York, and you hear Cousin Brucey, you know you've arrived in America.
Yep. That's
oh,
right.
It was just wonderful, you know. It's funny, it's coming, what happens that when you cross to the other side of 50, you get very sentimental, in case you haven't noticed, you know. Are you still
now,
there?
Right. Yeah, I'm here. Okay. I mean, I was listening to you, actually.
Yeah, no, it's just a sentiment. I'm sorry. I feel like Rambo. Oh, you should have remembered back in the 72 when I fell off the drum set. Yeah,
exactly.
That's where they got the idea for Spinal Tap. Yeah.
I talked to Tommy James about a week ago.
Yeah.
And when he appeared on Ed Sullivan, he said he swears that Ed was drunk, that usually he drinks, and that's why he can't pronounce the names of the bands that are on there.
That's great. I believe
it.
You got to believe it. I mean, can you imagine what he was thinking when he had these bands? I mean, Frank Sinatra and all that. Yeah, those guys come on, and Tony Bennett. But all of a sudden, these kids come on. I got to hand it to him. The fact that he let it happen, you know, he's really responsible for launching an entire, and that's Uncle Ed, you know, and God bless his soul, you know, that there's these guys, the old guys, they don't quite know what they're doing, but they feel something's coming around, it's going to bite them in the ass, you know, it's great, it's really cool.
Yeah, we wouldn't have gotten all the great acts if it wasn't for Ed, but I wish he had done a little homework before he introduced the band, you know.
Yeah. I love when he came when they all came to say hello to him at the, you know, after the, and your Jim, your Jim, Jim, and I think he was loaded. I think he was.
Yeah, you're Ringo, or you're Paul, or who's John? Are you John?
I remember we were supposed to. Well, I remember seeing Carmine. And what is it? Vanilla Fudge, right?
Yeah,
and they were on. And I remember seeing that. I said, geez, I hope Mountain goes. And I wasn't in Mountain, but it was way before that. And I said, wouldn't it be great for Mountain to play Ed Sullivan? And what happened is there was some talk of it, and he just went off the air.
He went off the air.
1970 or 66, and he went off the air, so we lost that baby. But, you know, there's certain things you say, boy, is there somebody you really want to play with? And I have to say, watching Elvis Presley do his martial arts, I thought to myself, boy, I'd love to drum behind that, you know,
cool.
Do the accents and all that. Can you imagine being behind Elvis as he pushes those punches and he kicks?
Yep.
And he was able to move in those days. It was great. It was great. So that's the one thing you miss a few, Ray. You know, you win some and you lose some. But I have no regrets. No, I don't. No, it's very cool.
No, man, you've been around everybody, all the greats, you know.
Well, you know, like Bill Buford said, it's about when you're born, mate.
Yeah.
And I was happy. happy. I'm happy to be born, and I'm happy to still be here, and it's great to talk to you. And, you know, yeah, and if we come to Florida, look out, because we're going to take you out. And, yeah, we're going to get the band back on the road.
Can you name some of the songs on your set list?
Yeah, I can name all of them if you want.
Okay, I didn't want to spoil it.
let me just get Mountain Climbing out. Okay, well, we Don't Look Around, which we never did.
Okay.
Sitting on a Rainbow, which we never did.
Right.
Traveling in the Dark, which we never played on stage.
Hmm.
Never in My Life, of course, we played. Sitting
on,
excuse me, Silver Paper, one of my favorites. I remember Noel had, he did an Irish version of Silver Paper. Like,
really?
Sun is shining on my world, sun is my shoes. It was great. Anyways, what else? Nantucket Sleigh Ride, of course, which we played. But when Leslie and I, over the last, 25, 30 years played it, it didn't sound like Nantucket Sleigh. It didn't have any keyboards in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what I did do is I said, you know what, I'm going to tell you a quick story. Warren Haynes was playing New Year's Eve at the Beacon Theater in New York.
Okay.
And Matt Apps, the drummer, invited me down to come down. And he tells me that New Year's Eve, this is the night before New Year's, he says, New Year's Eve, you know, we had our audience. We asked them to tell us the favorite song that Government Mule would cover. And it came up, one of the three favorites was Nantucket Sleigh Ride for Government Mule to play. So Matt Apps comes up to me and says, listen, tomorrow night we're playing Nantucket Sleigh Ride. I don't know if Warren told you. How does that 5-4 thing happen when you do the fill in the sleigh ride, you know, bam, ba-da-ba-bam, ba-da-ba-bam, bam, mm-hmm. bam. And I said, I looked at him and I'm saying, and he says, I can't get it. I said, well, Matt, excuse me, but I'm right here, you know, and why is Warren not like saying, hey, Cork, you want to play?
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit, I said, what's going on? Matt says, you're right. So he takes me upstairs to the dressing room on the night before, and I walk in, and Warren's sitting there, goes, oh, he says, Cork, I got to tell you. He says, of course I would love you to play. He says, but I got to tell you, I've been the last 10, 15 years I come to see you and Leslie play, I don't recognize the songs. Leslie's jamming out on these things, and
mm-hmm.
he's not playing, you know, he's not playing the original arrangements, et cetera,
right.
you know, because he's played them so much, he, you know, he expands on them.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'll tell you what, Warren says, he says, if you can learn Nantucket Sleigh Ride, if you can learn the drum part and come in tomorrow afternoon and rehearse with us, you can play it on New Year's Eve. You bet your ass. I drove back, I put on the CD, and you know what, Ray? I had forgotten all my parts on Nantucket Sleigh Ride.
Really?
I had to go back. I spent a couple hours because it goes through all the time changes.
Oh, no.
Anyways, because I played it with Leslie, but nowhere near the same arrangement.
Right.
So what happens, I go the next day to rehearsal, and we do it, and he's got a big smile on his face, and he says, all right, we're on for tonight. And it was a big thrill at that point to play Nantucket Sleigh Ride exactly like the record, and Warren sang it. And that convinced me that, wait a second, this is probably a lot of people feel that way. You know, I remember some of the shows Leslie and I did out in Armpit, Nebraska, a guy would come out, why didn't you play Mississippi Queen? I said, we did. And he said, I didn't recognize any of you know. And I'm thinking, you know what? It's a good idea to give the people, and for myself, it's for me,
mm-hmm.
to play the songs exactly like they are on the record. And that's why I named it, you know, I Play Mountain. And it's very clean. And you know what? The people that love the songs, how many are left is one thing. But the people come out, they love it because they're not like, I'm not scamming or promoting a new record. You know, I'm playing the songs for the love of the songs. Thank God it's some of the most beautiful material that Felix and Leslie wrote. And you know what? You got to be blessed with the material. The repertoire's got to be there. So I figure, why not? You know, so that's why I put these guys together and hit the road. And God bless the audience. They love it. You know, they're hearing it the way it should be done, the way it originally was done. And if they hadn't heard it before, they're hearing it for the first time, and hopefully it's fresh. You know.
Now, Sleigh Ride, is the lyrics something to do with cannibalism or something like that?
Oh, no, dedication was to Coffin. You're going to see a movie that's coming out now with the Heart of the Sea or something they're putting out. It's the story of Moby Dick, and it's got to be beautiful.
Right.
It's coming out actually this week.
Is there a song in
there? That's the story of Coffin. Where they had to. Yeah, they were out at sea. They had to eat each other. And Felix dedicated Nantucket Sleigh Ride to, what's his name? Something Coffin. I can't remember his first name. Owen Coffin. His name is Owen Coffin. Jesus, the memory's working good with you, Ray. You're sparking this thing. Jesus, I'm having a fun. It's all like sparks going on. I'm having brain farts up here.
We are from the 60s, you know.
That's right. I wasn't even there, and I'm joining. That's Owen Coffin. Yeah, that's the cannibalism. It's just coincidental that this movie's coming out. Who is the guy, Robert, the producer that he did Apollo 13? What's his name? He's a great director. Robert Bob, I can't think of his name, of all things. It's going to be a great movie, and it's well done, but it's the Nantucket sleigh ride. That's what that movie really is. It's the big boats going out and the long boats. It's quite something. Yeah.
Right. Now, Gail Collins, she kind of wrote some of the lyrics of that, right? Was it Gail Collins?
Gail Collins did, yeah. Felix's
yeah.
wife. Yeah, she
Felix's
did,
wife.
Did a great
yeah.
job on it. Well, it's a folk song.
Right.
It's like goodbye, little aunt. Robin Marie was my girlfriend in Nantucket before Felix even went to Nantucket. When I used to go there in the summer, she's a doll. She was a real, like, hippie, crafty chick. She's a doll. Nice, beautiful. And I used to go there, and she had a knitted blanket, and she's done blah, blah, blah. Anyways, Felix fell in love with Robin Marie. And, of course, that's why he used that, you know, goodbye. He just used her name in that. All that's pretty historical in a way.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, of course, the Nantucket sleigh ride is what happens when, you know, like Joni Mitchell said, you know, the machine takes over and puts you out there. You know, star-making machine. Okay.
Yeah. I think Gail died last year, right?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Yep, she did. She disappeared. She disappeared. That
wow.
I'll tell you, that whole thing was so weird. That was, you know, between Felix being shot and that whole trial and stuff. Whoa. You know, that was over the top. And, I was going to think about making a movie called Boom Boom and about Felix's, the life and death of Felix. You know, it's kind of like these days trying to get any movie done. You're in a bottleneck. You know, there's so many things going on out there. And they're all good. They're all good things.
Now, was Felix doing heroin with her during the days of Mountain, or was that something?
Well, you know, I hate to tell on anybody. Everybody was doing everything. Class A narcotics was the trend for everybody, and then you hear about Eric Clapton coming off and Peter Townsend.
Yeah.
It wasn't like an Hollywood junkie thing. It was like these guys had a lot of money, and if anything, they were just trying to stay buzzed, you know?
Right.
And as you get older, the buzz seems to disappear unless you find yourself a real 18-year-old girl, you know? That'll bring the buzz back, you know.
You know, it's amazing how heroin is making a tremendous comeback.
It is.
You know?
It's too bad. It's too bad. Yeah. I don't think. Well, you know what it is. It's the painkillers. It's the painkillers.
Right.
That, you know, I when you find out how cheap heroin is compared to buying, you know, those other things, I don't know about it, but I want to make that clear. there comes a time where you pass those rites of passage, you know.
Right.
I think, you know, everybody's going to go through what they're going to go through. But I'm sorry to say that I think that the medication, as we call it, had a lot to do with the stupidity and the recklessness that went on.
Right.
And had it not gone on, who knows? You know, anybody could talk about what could be. But the point is, it is very sad because Felix died at a time where he could have had a resurrection, you know. And he was a brilliant, brilliant
musician. He was very brilliant.
Yeah, and that's where the luck comes in, you know. Between him as a teacher and Jack Bruce as a teacher, you know, two bass players but well-rounded, brilliant musicians. I was lucky. I was sitting in the best seat in the house. You know, that's where I was. I was sitting right there enjoying it, sucking it all up. I was a sponge.
And you met Felix in your first band, right? Energy.
That's right. He produced When I Fall in Love. Yeah, all that. Yeah. I mean, it's the way things were going on, and it's a real small business now, if there is any business.
Right.
The paradigm for rock is so different now. It's so well organized. It's pretty, in a lot of cases, it's almost anal, but I think there's ways to work around it and just enjoy it for what it is, you know, take it for what it is. And you're one of those people that really does enjoy it. I find Ray, without schmoozing you, I find there's a passion in what you say and how you express,
you know,
your enthusiasm for music. And, you know, they're hard to find. Hard to find that kind of personality.
And nowadays it is. It really is. You know, I did research when I was a kid. I mean, I I like Mitch Miller. I went back to my mom and dad's era. You know, my mom was Cuban, Celia Cruz back in the day, and things like that. Dad's music, back in the 1920s and 30s, kids don't do that today. And they've they've got everything at their disposal to find out about these people.
Yeah. I think if people, let's put it this way, if you love music, you will eventually do that, because you're right. You can dig into Google and just get into that.
Get anything you want.
Get anything you want out. I mean, coincidentally, I'm Canadian, so we had a lot of Cuban music come through Canada.
Sure,
a lot of the Cubans came up there, and I was lucky enough. My mom would play, all these Tito Puente and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was great, and that's why I had the cowbell, because I always I always loved, the timbales and all that. You're not going to get a louder drum than the timbales, and that's what I needed when I played with those guys. That was the only thing that would cut. Stage, and I remember Bobby Rondinelli, a great drummer, and I remember I was playing somewhere. He says, "Cork, where are the timbales?" I went, "Oh man, you know what? I was all the time I had timbales in Mountain. I was dying to get myself. I couldn't afford. Well, I finally could afford to get tom toms. I feel like a trailer park drummer. Like I said, I couldn't afford to get the tom toms. And sure enough, Bobby says, "You're a stand man. Those are cool." So I had top timbales made up, and I have them now again. I'm back in the timbale land.
Cool. Well, I'm glad I got to hook you and Joe up on the phone anyway. Joe Lala and Sally.
That was great. God bless
Sally, he passed away not that long after that.
I did speak to him. I was in touch with him. We were trying to hook up. It's just that I think at that point I was heading out of town. Yeah, Joe Lala is one of those wonderful people, Yeah, well, they're all playing together now. They're all up there. They're having
that's
a
right.
great time. They're not dealing with ISIS and all that. They're up there.
Exactly.
They don't have to worry about Trump.
There's a movie coming out next month, I think, maybe in Canada, Liberty Village, somewhere in heaven. And you're
really?
In that, right? Yeah.
Where did you see that?
It's Liberty Village, Somewhere in Heaven, the movie. It's supposed to be released 2016. I think it's like a half an hour, 30-minute movie.
Well, that's funny because there's a place in Toronto that they did a movie on called Liberty Village.
Wikipedia, you're in it.
Are they releasing that?
Yeah, in 2016, I think.
No shit. Where did you hear that?
Wikipedia. I just punched it in, Liberty Village, Somewhere in Heaven.
Yeah.
And it said, I think you were interviewed.
Yeah, I was. I
for the
did.
Movie.
Yeah.
And they're going to play Mountain music, and it's going to be for the archives, I think, in Canada.
Oh,
stuff
wow.
Like that.
Wow, that's wonderful. Yeah, the guy that did it was trying. I remember him coming upstairs. He says, "Do you mind if I film?" And Taffy decorated my apartment, and she's and she did a beautiful job. It was. And I remember he came up to the apartment and says, "Wow, this is like heaven." I remember I said this. I said, "No, I'm living in heaven up here." It was like an apartment overseeing the city and the village.
Right.
It was very cool. That was the best part of Toronto, was that village.
I talked to David Clayton Thomas.
Yeah.
And we talked about, his music that he began playing was because of that. And all the great artists that came, I guess, into Toronto. Because there was a color barrier in the United States where all the R&B players could only play like Detroit, places like Detroit.
Right.
So they all came to Canada instead, and all the great R&B players played in Toronto.
That's right. That's funny you mention that, because I actually been writing little blogs to myself, and I went to see Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee in Montreal. And they were freezing their little testosterones off. Because you're right, they did come into Canada because, the Canadians, they don't know about all that stuff, or maybe they did, but they didn't show it. So I guess as long as people can handle the cold, they're fine. And between you and I, musicians really don't like cold. In general, you're right. That's it, Clay. David Clinton Thomas, before Blood, Sweat, and Tears, he had his band, Bartholomew Plus Three, and the local band I had, Energy. We were like the Montreal pop band. And David Clayton Thomas was the Toronto thing. And, of course, Blood, Sweat, and Tea went to New York and picked up on a few
right.
of the guys
right.
in the village there, and they put that band together. But that was, yeah, that was that Canadian scene. The village that was around for David Clayton Thomas was Yorkville. That
mm-hmm.
was Yorkville. That's
right.
where all the folkies, you know, Gordon
right.
Lightfoot, Ronnie Hawkins, the band. They mm-hmm. came from that. They came from the Cock
right.
Door in Yorkville, and you know, Ian and Sylvia. Who did "We'll Sing in the Sunshine"? Gail Garnett. Wow,
mm-hmm.
that's a big one.
Yeah,
that's a big. Yeah, they all came from the village, and that's when Albert Grossman went
mm-hmm.
up to Yorkville and got Gordon Lightfoot, and as a result, he got
yep.
Bob Dylan and that. Anyways, yeah, a lot of history there. A lot of history.
That was huge.
On that.
Yeah,
you know?
That was huge.
Yeah,
and I talked to Randy Bachman about it, and also Burton Cummings, because they all kind of, all good guys. All good guys.
They're all good guys,
yeah.
You know, you have Rush, those guys, Mahogany,
yep.
Rush. There's
yeah.
There's a lot of good Canadian artists that just, they get, I don't know
yeah.
if it's true, but a lot of guys say, I don't want to fight all those Americans, so they just stay up there.
I don't know, the way things are going, maybe I'll move to Canada.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
A little cold.
Well, listen, we got Justin Trudeau, right? He just
yep.
got in there.
That's right.
That is such a blessing because,
yeah.
you know, I'm not that much into politics and I've
right.
been out of Canada for
right.
a while. But when you flash back to Pierre Trudeau, those
mm-hmm.
were the golden years in Canada politics. He changed
right.
so many things. He was so ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these kind of like real uptight kind of conservatives got in there.
Right.
I must say some of the conservatives had some good ideas. They didn't
mm-hmm.
go to Iraq and all that. That's one thing. But without getting deep into it, Justin Trudeau is going to be a real player in the world. He's a kid, and he's going
right.
to change. It's like the kid that changed the planet.
Exactly.
I got a feeling he's going to be very, very cool because he has no, you know, he has no preconceptions. He's going to do what he feels.
Right.
You know, I just hope he gets the support from the other leaders of the country. You know. Anyways,
yep.
I'm sorry I'm on that. I just read.
That's okay.
Read something today.
We're wrapping things up now, Corky. Anything else you'd like to promote? What about the Memory Thieves? Are they still together? Are you still doing concerts with the Memory Thieves?
The Memory Thieves, no. What happened?
Nope.
I'm not going to get into it, but Josh and the Memory Thieves went their own way. The girls went ahead and they started a band. No, that sort of went its own way. But when
right.
I'm on the road, we have a compilation that has the Memory Thieves on the CD. So it's cool. That was
cool.
That was a wonderful transition.
Good band.
Yeah, it was really
yeah.
cool. I mean, it's music. We're all a work in progress, right, Ray? We
yep.
just go through these things. And
just
look
the
at all. You have to do is take a look at Bob Dylan, and
truth.
You realize, okay, I'm in the loop. You know,
you got it.
You know, we're
Corky,
playing.
Make sure you give me a caller or email me or get Tuija to email me on Facebook or something when you're in Florida. And
we will definitely.
We'll see if we can have lunch together or something.
That sounds good. That sounds like a plan, and we'll do that. In the meantime,
Corky,
you have a great holiday. You know.
You too, man. Thank you so much for being on the call today. And more importantly, man, for all the incredible music you've given us with Mountain, West Bruce and Lang, and Into the Present with your brilliant rock opera, Playing God, and Corky Lang Plays Mountain. Thank you so much, Corky.
Thank you.
Happy holidays, man.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now. Be sure to visit CorkyLangWorks.com and PlayingGodRocks.com and purchase the brilliant rock opera Playing God by Corky Lang and the Perfect Child, available at Amazon.com. I gave it 5 stars. It's an awe-inspiring rock musical production and a cross between Welcome to My Nightmare, The Wall, and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Very special thanks to the beautiful Tuija for arranging this interview today, Tuija of Polite Bystander Productions, for hooking us up with the legendary Corky Lang. And please join me biweekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have any comments or suggestions or would like to be on the show, give us a call at 941-877-1552. Or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine. when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on VBS Radio, Station 1.